Alrighty folks, welcome along to a Made the Parade special. I am joined today by Mervyn Gibson, who is, what's your real title?
I'm Grand Secretary of the Grand Lounge.
All right, there you go. So I didn't want to make a mistake there, you know, so start off on the wrong foot.
So you can call me too early in the morning, I'm hopping up.
Brilliant. So it's been a while since we've had any podcasts from Made the Parade. We've been doing other things. You'll be aware that we did have the TV show that we were on late night with Made the Parade. And there's a few things that have kind of got in the way of that. But that's neither here nor there. We're here to have a conversation with Mervyn about a few things that are relevant to bonds, but also just relevant to the community in general. Absolutely. So, Mervyn, absolutely delighted after a long period of time to finally have you on the podcast. Thanks.
Good to be here, I have to say. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Talk to me a bit about your 12th then. We're just obviously past the 12th and everything. How'd it go?
I think it was a good 12th. I was down in Bangor myself. Right. I moved around wherever we were speaking. So it was a good parade in Bangor. They changed it around a bit. They did the platform proceedings before they left the field, and did a route around the town and just back to the field. Now the rain came on when they got back to the field, but up to then it was a great day. Of course, then I travelled back to Belfast to walk home with number 6 district.
Right.
And I have to confess, I don't go to the field to walk home with. I joined them in Middle Passy, but it's always good to walk up Newnard Road and Tampa Avenue into what I call home territory.
Good stuff. And we'll get away into this a wee bit later on, because I think it's useful to be having this conversation now, given that all there was a bit of a media panic prior to the 12th this year in regards to some leaked documents and things like that. We'll get talking a wee bit about that in a minute or two. But for those who don't know, what is your, when you talk about your role with the Orange, what does that require of you? Because people have seen you being dragged into all sorts of conversations, you're on radio a lot, you're on TV a lot, but what is it that you do within the Orange?
Well, some people think it's my full-time job. My full-time job's actually a Presbyterian minister, and that takes up all of my time. Well, not all of the time, but my foundry time goes into the institution. I was elected Grand Secretary after the late Drew Nelson died. And the job is to look after the admin side and the personnel side of the institution. And as I say, I have maybe 35,000 bosses, because everybody knows how to do the job better than I do, which is fair enough. And they may have a good point to something. But it's basically looking after the discipline, the admin, and also falls in my role, the publicity and the media. So I'm the one that gets the face of on the television, or the wife says, of a body for a widescreen TV and a face for radio. This is probably right there too. But that's why you see me so often. Not that I crave that role. Uh-huh. Everybody thinks, well, you must love it. No, I think we all hate it. But we do it. And sometimes, hopefully, you get it right most of the time. But the odd time you can say the wrong thing and then you're deep in trouble. But anyway, I enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, and I think it's good that the media does engage, regardless of whether sometimes maybe their motives aren't necessarily always in the right place, but it's good that they're providing the platform for the institution to engage with the wider public and get that out there, because that doesn't always necessarily happen.
No, it doesn't, have to say. And I think they suffer from, they can't get there. They don't seem to have unionist commentators on. And I wouldn't go be a unionist commentator, I would go on as the Orange. So I get asked about a lot of things and a range of things. And it's like everything else, there's good guys in the media and there's bad guys in the media. There's some of ulterior motives for what they're chasing down, particularly some of the newspapers or maybe Nationalist or Republican content. But I always find if you're decent with somebody, they're decent with you. If they don't try and overly sort of trip you up unnecessarily. And don't get me wrong, the main hard questions, hard questions will come and have to be answered. But most people in the media, like everyone else, are decent. But it does appear that the unionist community and the Protestant community, there is a bias in the media.
Yeah,
I think that's historic. But I do think it also needs to be challenged by ourselves where we find that. And 50% may be a bias, but 50% may be just misinformation or people not going on to say the right things, or from our community, there's reluctance to go on to the media.
I think that's part and parcel as well, but I think there definitely is a reluctance, because I know some of the guys that I've spoke to in the media are like, we really struggle to get someone from a unionist perspective.
And one of the reasons that is because they're frightened of their own community, because if you do something wrong in our community, they're unforgiven.
Yes.
You know, I've seen it. You go on and last couple of interviews seemed to have gone well because people were stopping in coffee shops. I remember that was good and all. But equally, if I happen to say the wrong thing or getting misinterpreted, you get a lot of brickbats, and particularly social media is just around. Now, I'm talking about from my own community. Uh-huh. Sometimes, the other communities, there are just trolls there who are going to attack you all the time. So I think we need to be more forgiving about those who go on the media.
Yeah.
And it's not easy because you're sitting there thinking, what's going to come next? What am I going to hit with? And you maybe three or four different areas to try and keep right. Because if you say one thing, you could offend the loyal orders. Say something else, you offend the bonds, or you offend politicians or whatever. So you have to try and walk that line. So it's it's not easy, but I think more people should become involved.
No, I definitely think that there's probably room for a ream of kind of media-based training within the community to try and engage with that. Because I know sometimes you get asked on to these things. I know it's happened to me as well. And we're going to talk about this. And then the first question you ask is completely unrelated.
That's not really, you have to accept that. I have to say that goes to the territory. You know, really, they'll say you want to invite something innocuous, but you know there's been issues you're going to hear for it, and you know you're going to get them. So you don't go on naively thinking you're not going to get them.
Exactly. But it's the whole idea of being prepared, though, isn't it? And that's that height. And then if you do take time to consider what it is that you're saying, it almost, they're hating something. They're not talking about this for a reason.
And equally, I usually do have a shaded notes, and what I call the comfort blanket. I never refer to them, nor do I use them half time. Okay. It's like a comfort blanket just in case
it comes up and stuff. Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of the issues that have been live over the last few weeks. And I think it's good, as I say, good to do this, to have this conversation now that kind of the dust has settled a bit on the 12th. Because there was a wee bit of a hoorah around, just prior to it with the document that was leaked around the Belfast County Lodges considering a potential change to the route on the 12th and a number of reasons behind that. There was a few things that were mentioned in the document. One of them was around the idea that the year before 12th was one of the worst on record. Now, I don't recall that 12th being a particularly bad thing in regards to there was maybe a couple of incidents. I know there was the incident in the morning with the bin and the bond and all that kind of stuff. But outside of that, I thought that the parade passed off pretty peacefully.
Let me put a caveat on. First of all, it was a leaked document that shouldn't have been leaked, and I condemn whoever leaked it. Secondly, it's still an ongoing document, so I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty, but I'm happy enough to give personal opinions about several things. And the one thing I did say in the mainstream media, but of course it gets lost, that when it was said it was a parade, it was abysmal, or I can't remember the words that were used, that was talking about the internal organisation. As I said frequently, the public wouldn't notice any difference. That was particularly a parade coming home where lodges were in the wrong places, districts in the wrong places, and then you had the gaps that creates and all that. So it was an internal issue.
Right.
It was abysmal. The parade was grand.
Uh-huh.
I totally agree. It was a good parade like any other year, and you'll always get some incidents. But the media immediately thought, and particularly the nationalist media picked it up, they're even saying it was abysmal themselves. We weren't saying the parade was abysmal. It was an internal document for discussion that said the organisation needs to be greatly improved. So that was a misinterpretation. So and then people used it to their own advantage.
And that will always be the case as well. And I think it's always looking beyond what's being said, because how that gets presented, as you know, in terms of people picking up on it and saying, the Orange are saying the parade is abysmal. Told you, we all think it's abysmal. Primarily, it was the organisational aspect.
It was the organisational aspect of people coming back into the parade late and joining not at the field and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what we were talking about, as opposed to the public perception of the parade. With the exception, of course, Shaftesbury Square has always been, that's been going 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
That's not new there. I've been involved in trying to sort things out there for many, many years when it was even more serious than it was now. But it's morphed into more anti-social behaviour now, an issue. So that was a public perception, not a perception, that was a public issue. That's one of the things they try to deal with.
Yeah. And I think for me, there is some of that. So you talked a wee bit about maybe partly the return parade being, the organisational aspect of that. And because the time between when the bonds break up and the parade breaks up and then returns again, it's a shorter period of time now, isn't it? It used to be a heck of a lot longer.
Yeah, I think that was the issue, trying to sort of change things by shortening things because people maybe didn't have as much time. I think it was a case at some stage people were going to debate the bullet and decide, and it's down to the County Grand Lodge and the district and the private lodges what they do. But I think the issues they were trying to address was the parade's too long, basically, for AIDS nowadays. And it's not the first time the parade's been changed make it shorter and change locations. The second was the issue of the organisation of it coming home. And the third was anti-social behaviour, particularly around Shaftesbury Square. So what the attempt was, it's no secret that when a lot of bands and lodges get to the field, they don't go into the field. They get a bus and go somewhere to have their lunch and then come back again. And it was just seen, what was the point of that in many ways? Because when they come back late, that created the hassle.
Yeah.
So why in the first place, why not think about it? And again, I'm not saying it's a right or wrong decision. It's up to the county to decide. But I thought, let's have a circuitous route to walk back round into your own community. And then when you get back to your own community, you can either parade your own area, you can have a festival in the park, you can have a barbecue, you can have a sous-spouse, whatever particular lodge and bands want to do. Then you're actually, you know, there's all spin-offs for that. They're putting economics back into your own community.
Yeah.
And anyways, people will benefit, the shops and the hostelries and all will benefit from that way. So, but equally, if people still think it's a good idea, we go to the field and everybody disappears in a bus for 2 hours and then comes back in the bus and then goes home again. And it's a bit of a shambles going home because the buses all don't come back at the same time or at the right time. Then if that's why people want to continue that, that sounds but a pejorative me putting it that way, but that's the reality of it.
And I think one of the things that you have, there, I think there maybe is a room for a compromise, and I think that's maybe where a lot of people thought whenever this document appeared that this was a done deal. And like you're saying, it was a working document.
Always was.
And the idea that there needed to be, we need to be seen to be doing something. Because you mentioned there about the pre-change. I remember whenever it used to be up the lane into Eden Derry.
Yeah.
And that was an extra mile and a half just to get up that lane. So as I remember that being my first 12th that I ever walked was going up that lane. You thought you were near the end. And then you get up that wee path. You're like, kind of going, this thing is never ending. So, I mean, even then it is short, but it is a long enough.
Sadly, my memory's going to Finnegan, come back even further.
Right, okay.
Well, in the 20s, I used to walk to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And even out to Lambeg, you know. And physically, people have changed. You know, as I say, I was pointing out to someone the other day, if you look at old photographs, a flag was the size of a banner.
Mm.
And one wiry man who probably worked in the shipyard carried it because he was fit and strong.
Yeah, do that, yeah.
Then we got two men to carry the banners as things moved on. And now sometimes people get struggled for to carry the banners to put them in the back of cars. So society's changed. We're not necessarily as strong and fit as we used to be. And equally, we can't maybe walk as far.
Mm.
And everybody thinks, oh, you're giving up tradition. But tradition serves you. It's not something that we serve.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? No, I get
tradition molds what you do as opposed to sort of it becoming the iconic thing. We have to stick to that route. We have to do this, we have to do that. And once it's explained to people, I think people will understand the reasons. And I say, the decision's not taken. And the vast majority of people can say, oh, no, we don't want it to change. Or as you say, I think there's room for improvement. Maybe people say, well, what would make it acceptable to you? I think the other issue is it appeared that this document was just drawn up by the county in some sort of isolation.
Mm.
It'd been a consultation process for a couple of years, asking people for ideas. You know, if they didn't come up with ideas, then leadership is about giving ideas.
Yeah.
Now, if this has promoted discussion about it, then it's been a good thing.
Yeah.
But there also needs to be an outcome for it. We can't continue something that's not working for us in many ways.
So, and I think for me, and I know people who have followed what I've been doing in terms of the podcast, I mean, one of the best 12ths I think that I've ever had was the year that the 12th was at home.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we walked around our own area, you know, I really thought that was an amazing, you know, day. Being finished at like 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon and being able to actually enjoy
the rest
of the day rather than getting to about 9:30 at night and going, I'm busted.
And this almost is a compromise, because we got the feedback too. People who I know I never thought would enjoy the 12th and thought this was fantastic, wonderful, and do what they want after the parade is over. But this was a sort of compromise roundup, because equally you want people to see the whole parade. So if everybody stayed at home, nobody sees the whole of Belfast County. So this is doing a route where people have the opportunity to see the whole county.
Yeah.
We're also going to the City Hall to pay our respects to the fallen, which is very important. Yeah. So you're getting all that, plus you're getting then home early to do what you want to do. So I think there's, but equally there may be tweaks to it.
Yeah.
And other people may feel it's difficult because, you know, would they go back when their own area if they're in a difficult area and things like that. So all those things need to be looked at. But the county's certainly in listening mode.
Yeah, and that's good. And I think because there was a lot of stuff that even was on parade. I know there was a number of lodges had put things on their banners and stuff like that there, you know. And
but that's indicative of unionism. Like I said, in the media, you do wrong, they're all over you. You know, I'd have difficulty with those who shout it and threw coins and the signs in the buses and the signs in their banners. You know, discussing, it's not being secret, but discussing the lodge room. If you have concerns, bring it through the organisation and see them. But some of those lodges maybe hadn't heard for 2 years. They haven't heard their opinion.
Yeah.
I think at some stage there's going to be a decision made.
Yeah.
But it won't be just the county officers saying, oh, this is the way it's going
to
be.
But the private lodges are going to have an input.
Absolutely. And they should always were going to have an input.
Yeah.
And having them put up the nay as well.
Yeah, but and as you said, there needs to be some framework to have a discussion.
And we need to listen to the bands too.
Yeah.
You know, the parade isn't all about the order, you know. Mm. I talk about the Orange family, mm-hmm. and I see the bands and orders all part of that. So we need to listen to what the bands think. And some of the feedback I have from the bands, sitting in the hairdressers the other day, and about in front of me, it was from a local band. He said, well, I think it's a great idea, getting back to our hairs. Now, I've heard others say, oh, we're giving this up. It's this attitude, because we've been under attack from a public, it's about giving up braids. They equate reducing the route and enhancing our braid as giving something up.
Oh, yeah.
But it's actually enhancing.
It's what you're doing. And I think but it also addresses the wider social responsibility that we have in regards to, you mean, because there are some things that you could say there's validity in, you know, in terms of being able to move about the town and stuff, or being able to move. But I mean, the parade doesn't cause too much hassle in regards to, you know, freedom of movement, even for emergency services. That's another one that gets leveled.
We have worked with city centre management for 10 years mm-hmm. when they started Orange Fest, and the shop's open now, closed, and the parade's passing and open again.
Yeah.
And there needs to be issues how that's promoted.
Yeah.
And equally, as I said, the shops have done, it is a public holiday, so a lot of people want to come into town, but those who do want to shop when there's not a big crowd in the town, and that's normal. So we've worked with them, we've worked with the police to enhance things, and we've continually tried to improve it for the tourist board's a classic one.
Yeah.
You know, a number of tourists that come to the 12th, home, there used to be just Scotsies coming to talk about, but I, on occasion a few years ago, to drop out and Royal Avenue uh-huh. and we had my own lodge come back, my own district come back. Boy beside me from Spain.
Yeah.
And I started talking to him. I said, he says, I was here a couple of years ago. I come back specifically to see it all this time and spend a couple of days.
It's crazy the amount of people that you do meet around the parade. I mean, a number of times I've run into sort of like even Chinese, Japanese tourists who were there, taking it in and going, what's going on here? I've run into a bunch of some Spaniards myself, some French people as well, who were like, what?
And we need to answer it for in the sense of it, so they understand what it's about.
Yeah.
And I think that, been working with the tourist board, and I think COVID knocked everything back.
Yeah,
so a lot of that's being picked up again.
Yeah.
And like that. And people think, you know, forgetting Belfast every 12th for many years or an evening, there was a reception held for a minister from the Republic who watched the parade in Bedford Street every year. And what do you call it? They come up specifically to see the parade, and sometimes it was a tourist minister.
Yeah.
You know, so they talk about, oh, it's hard, and this one's not welcome, that one's not welcome. It's not the case.
Yeah, no, and again, it comes down to that perception aspect, you know, in terms of what people think it is that they're actually walking into. And I suppose as a bondsman, you know, you encounter that as well. I've done a number of sessions with residence groups and stuff, you know, and youth groups in terms of on the falls and things like that. And some of the things that they've asked me was like around about the idea of the sectarian tunes and all this kind of stuff. And I think, well, if there's no words, how do you know a tune sectarian? And they mentioned a particular one, and I said, well, that's actually a hymn.
Yes,
I said, so if you hear different words, I said, maybe there's an... That's what you're hearing.
Yeah.
But we know that's what they're thinking. Like, but how do you know what I'm thinking?
I have to say, I don't like saying this, but now so get over yourselves. They think we go out to annoy them on the 12th. We go out to celebrate the 12th and have a good day. In fact, during the parades this week, we were getting away from that. The 12th became a bane for people because they knew it was going to be confrontation, hassle, all sorts of things. We're actually now getting back to enjoying the 12th again and wanting other people to enjoy it as well. It's not about beating it up anybody else
for the sake
of a phrase. It's about going out and celebrating the day. And people, I think, should have the breath to do it. And many nationalists do understand that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, it's not that we need to go on a charm offensive. I think there definitely needs to be open dialogue in regards to let's promote understanding. Because what I always talk to people about is understanding's better than knowledge.
Absolutely.
You know, you might think you know something, but until you actually engage, you can't really understand it.
We see that in the Museum of Orange Heritage. Mm-hmm. We have a bigger uptake from Catholic maintained schools than we do from one of better description state schools.
Yeah.
Because in many ways, state schools think they know it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. Many of our community think they know it, but they don't.
Yeah.
But equally, a nicest community, many of these want to learn.
Exactly.
Some don't. You look at some of the commentators, Irish News, you know, they have their fixed views, and they're going to change that. That's life.
I know.
But I think a lot of nicest want to know more and understand it better. Are they going to come to it? Maybe yes, maybe no, but at least they're trying to understand it.
Well, that's it. And there's almost a paradox thing there in terms of our own community in regards to this idea of thinking that we know, and yet knowing on the ground, a lot of people going, we need to improve education around our culture and our history and so on, because we've got young people who haven't grown up in proximity to a lot of this stuff that don't understand some of the rationale behind it, the reasons behind things and stuff. I even think about my own kids and all. I mean, I think about whenever I grew up, just, Tabermere Avenue. I mean, this was part and parcel of everyday life.
Absolutely.
You know, whereas my kids have grown up in a different area of Belfast where they haven't been exposed to this, you know, and, you know, and it's like a man indoctrinating the kids, you know, but it's more about this is, you need to understand why I go and do this. You know, this is why I feel that I want to do this and be a part of the bond and et cetera, and why this is really important. But if, so there's a balance there that needs to be struck, you know, in terms of that. But the other thing that struck me as well was, and I don't know why you found this, Mervyn, in terms of being spoken to by the media and other things, you hear this thing about the Orange being an outdated, ancient organization, but yet whenever there is either something, an issue that comes up, the first people that people want, why aren't the Orange talking about this?
Yeah.
And I think you live in this wee limbo of damned if you do sometimes, damned if you don't.
Yeah, sounds like the soundtrack of my life. but you're right, I have to say people do turn. But this idea we're an antiquated old organisation, not the case. We're not as big as we once were, but we're not in freefall.
Mm.
You know, some churches and nominations and other fraternal orders are in freefall. We're not. We're holding our own membership.
Sure.
Difficulty is maybe people join it and not realising what it was or not. It's not for them. Leave that. That's life.
Yeah.
But our membership isn't in freefall. And secondly, yes, it's an older profile, but you know, if only look at my church or other churches or other things, there's a lot of things that are older profile, but there are younger members there. And this year, I think there's a revival in Orange and the whole Orange culture and Unionist culture. But we've now more arches up. There's like maybe 20 new arches over the last couple of years.
It's a definite real.
There's a revival. Orange halls are getting refurbished. There's more new banners dedicated this year than any other. So people don't invest, as I said in the 12th day, in an organisation that's down. Invest in the future. And we see that now. Maybe lodges aren't as big as they were, but then that's maybe a case. Maybe some of the smaller ones need to amalgamate with the bigger lodges. Uh-huh. Although that's difficult because there's an emotional tie from followers in that lodge, etc. But I actually see a revival in Orange culture. And it's important that we not only recognise that, but we begin to address it strategically. Where is that taking us? Because I think that is lacked within the broader promise and Unionist loyalist community, is that we tend to just do things. We're good at doing them, but we're not good at the strategic level and placing ourselves in the right place to develop this and move this on. We're sort of very, you know, excuse the term, we're just Presbyterian, dark face, and we get on with it.
Right.
But we need to think what we're getting on with. We need to think, how does that fit into the broader picture?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of scope there to develop some strategic thinking around our culture. But I actually see it growing. And if you look, it used to be just the 12th day. A number of adverts I've seen in social media for barbecues, tractor runs, all sort of fun days, all related to the 12th.
Yeah.
And even after the 12th, where it used to be just the one day. You maybe had a street party on the 11th, and that was it. But now, actually, from the 1st of July,
there's a lot of stuff going on.
And
yeah.
If you go back to the coronation, if it hadn't been for the Orange in many areas, there'd have been nothing. And I'm not saying we're the great thing. Yeah. When I say Orange, I mean the Orange family. I'm talking about all the loyalists, talking about the bands and some good community groups out there too.
Yeah.
But as you say, people look to the order, what are you doing about this? And there's something politically, yes, we do get involved. It was interesting when the Tonista was up from the south recently talking to political parties. He requested to come and see the Orange on his way home because he was interested in our opinion.
Sure.
But legally you get, why are they going to them? They're not elected, they're not this. But we are a reasonably influential organisation.
Yeah.
And so people do want to hear your opinion, and we have an opinion about most things, I have to say.
And I think that that's, but as you said previously, that's that tightrope that you walk. It's like kind of going, people don't want to hear from you, and then all of a sudden it's like there's an issue. Oh, why aren't you talking about this? You know, and I think it's sometimes that's, and it's
sometimes
unfair.
Sometimes you take a neutral stance. For instance, Brexit.
Yeah,
the order didn't say aye or nay because we have members on both sides of the argument.
Yeah,
so things like, well, I still call it 11 plus. Let's say, you know, we have people on both sides of that, so we don't take a stand. There's things we don't take a stand on. What we are, of course, strong in is the union.
Yeah,
and we wouldn't compromise in that, or strong on our faith issues as well. But there's a lot I think we have to contribute to civic society. And sadly, in many places, we've been excluded from that civic society. So we'll have to rediscover our place. and be ourselves, because years ago you had to reinvent yourself as an Ulster Scots group to get money, etc. Thankfully, those days have moved on. The Ulster Scots is doing well, but there's other facets to our community outside Ulster Scots.
No, and there's other areas that are starting to move in towards funding. I know that Belfast City Council is moving towards, they have a cultural project and stuff that's being developed currently that could be definitely used to bonds and the wider unionist family as well. I think, you know, it's great that people are starting to recognise that there's something to contribute here.
And it's not the science, it's not the it's a spin off of that, because that becomes, you realise there's education in it. For our children, for young, particularly, Alan has said, against the poor qualification of young Protestant males. And that can be addressed. So it's not just dealing with our people. That's the point. They sometimes think, we get a grant for a hall and a pitch in a new kitchen, we get a grant for a pitch uniform. But actually, those grants, yes, they're good and they're needed, but there's grants there for music tuition. That's increasing some kids' skills who might be so academically inclined.
Exactly, that's it.
I'm not saying I'm a bit biased, not academic. But you have the whole remit there that you can get involved in wider community life and creating a better society for everybody. I remember, I think it was Dan Gore when he started working with the bands, and Dan's working class Protestant originally. But he couldn't believe the remit was in bands, everything from care workers to salesmen. Just the whole life was in a band, and it's the same logic, but people know, you're in a band, you must be a thug, you must be this, you must be that. And same with the order, you must be a bigot, you must be this and that. And people stereotype you. And sadly, I go back to the point, it's not only the nationalist community or Republican community, it's within the Protestant community as well.
In terms of how you're viewed. And I think one of the other things is that there is changes in some of the things. I look at the Londonderry Bonds Forum and the way that they've, the legitimisation process that they've put in place for the likes of teaching B-flat flute in school. They've got qualifications that are attached to that. They're doing that, in terms of Highland dance and so on as well. Solace are amazing. The Northwest Cultural Partnership are doing amazing things, I think, in regards to
Schomburg Society and
exactly.
Well.
You know, there's a lot of
Macrofelt's taken off there, and Limerick Valley is a museum and imported down. Actually, people don't see that revival.
Exactly.
And we don't maybe articulate and promote it enough. And that's the strategic level. We need to begin to promote all this. Do people realise? Yeah. I didn't realise that was going on.
Exactly, that's it.
You go up to Solace and realise that there's 600 kids a week going
or
through high
dance
and more, and how many people that employs. No, it would blow you away.
I know. No, it's amazing, because I waited a few guys from Macrofelt at an event, and in terms of the organisation that I work for, we did an event as part of the Four Corners Festival, and we had a number of the young lads who were involved in the July Festival that takes place down in Macrofelt area, and Stephen Nolan, it was there the night they were there, which was interesting. He was actually quite taken aback at just how articulate these young people were in terms of the organisational skills that they had, who they had to interact with to make sure their event goes on. And the July Festival down there is amazing.
And you said yourself, the July Festival, that's all grown this last couple of years.
Yeah.
Before it was the 11th night and the 12th day, but now we're talking about July Festival, which is wonderful. But I'm maybe have a hobby horse here, but that's a good festival, Macrofelt, that's great. But if you look at what West Belfast has morphed into and now connected, the ones in Londonderry and all that, we need to be saying this is going on throughout the province.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually sharing more information with each other. How did they do it? What can we do? Hey, we're all not going to be the same.
Yeah.
But what do you call it? We can pick up ideas and strengths that they've used and then use them.
Exactly. This idea of growth, though, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, the likes of the Fela and stuff didn't really, it had small beginnings as
absolutely.
Well, to the point where it's a massive event.
And equally, I'm not agreeing, I'm not saying mimic a flair, we have to do what we want to do, it's our culture.
Yeah.
And that will be maybe totally different, might pick up aspects of it. But it's just using that as an example of what can be done, as opposed to necessarily a model.
But it's about its quality as well, isn't
absolutely.
It? It's about the idea of having a quality, you know, event that's going on. And I think that's really what you're talking about. It's not a bonfire, it's an event. You're planning an event. You know, there's a lot of safety planning and stuff that comes into that. There's a heck of a lot more than this that meets the eye.
And the other thing that's good is integration into the broader community. We have taken a stand for several years now at the Balmoral Show.
Yes.
Massively popular. people just seeing you there.
Yeah.
And equally people from the south coming, what are you about? I remember this year I was talking to three busmen from Monaghan who actually bring the band up for the 12th day in the Lords,
right.
But not from our tradition. And talked to them all about what it was, plus our own people seeing there. And like Omo Show, there was an Orange presence this year. So sometimes people like us to do our own thing.
Mm.
We need to be saying, well, hold on, our band could play at your event.
Yeah.
Mm, our land big drums could welcome the people coming off the boat.
The boat, yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
So we need to be pushing that more, integrating back and taking our place and stuff like that, because too many people would like to see us in our own meet, have your own meet festival, do your own thing, but not involved in the way that you sell it.
And that's the, when you get this whole culture, what culture? You know, there's this idea of what culture. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's an easy stick to try and beat the community with.
It's easy stick because we can't articulate in a sense way.
Uh-huh.
And that's, we're actually multicultural.
Yeah.
I remember two daughters going in some of the states when they were younger, and they were saying, they were asked what to do, and there was the Irish dance and something. They said, what do? Do we sing the South? And they'll be like, we'll be labelled as bigots.
Uh-huh.
But their cultures are lived out every day.
Yeah.
Their cultures is much about what they watch on TV and everything else.
That's it.
And I'm not knocking nations, but it's very monoculture. It's a one sport and organisation with many facets to it, one language. So there's a monoculture. And I'm not saying they're not welcome and all that, but our culture is broad.
Yeah.
We've several aspects to it. You know, from around the world.
Oh, definitely. And as you say, I think that there's definitely needs to be moved towards that. I know they're in terms of, you know, out by Oma direction. I think it's part of the North Wales Cultural Partnership. You've got this, the Trod A&I group that are, you know, are coming up in terms of let's reframe the way this is being put across and stuff. And I think that all those things are definitely positive moves.
And socially, and this is maybe a hobby horse, man. I love ballads. Mm-hmm. Not so much tradition, but ballads. But, you know, I don't do it for obvious reasons, but right up the falls, and that's in every bar. But you go into bars or hotels, where there'd be a traditional group or somebody playing in the corner. You might be a country westerners, which I'm not knocking, but you think there's lots of bandsmen out there, there's lots of singers. You know, that tradition's just not there. People go out and enjoy boys in a corner sitting having a bit of a session and a mean session of the music and just enjoy that. And it's trying to, again, it's not copying, but I think that would be good for tourists. Be good for us.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I think there's an element when sometimes, and it's not that when you go into some bars and there's a loyalist singer on.
Yes.
And I get that if that's what you're into, you have to date.
The South Boys, I have no issue with that.
You know what I mean?
I think that needs broadened.
Yeah.
And we do it pretty good with the pipes and things.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think we've got the flutes and the accordions and the same way, because it tends to be the whole band needs to be there to play.
Yeah.
When you're talking about a couple of fluters playing a few tunes, maybe somebody giving a bit of a chance.
Well, that's where the rebirth even of the fife and drum units that are coming. You know, I know that there's one down in Londonderry. It's just the Garrison, and then you have the Ingoldsby. You know, there's those guys that are bringing in their smaller units, and you know.
Brilliant, and that we just need to grow that.
Yeah, no, definitely, I think you're right. Now, in terms of that, we're saying that we're up for change with the 12th, we're up for saying this, and you know, but there's nothing set in stone. If we can improve and make it a better day for everybody, great, and you know, and as long as people don't feel like they're losing stuff, you know, that it's your word in terms of enhancing the experience of the day, I think that's really important. The other thing that I did want to talk to you about was another, unfortunately, leaked document that came from the county in regards to the bonds and this idea of an approved bonds register. Now, I know recently on the radio and stuff that you mentioned you hadn't read the document and stuff, but I'm just wondering what your thoughts are, because there's some stuff in that there that I know bonds may be okay with. There's other things in that document would cause me as a bondsman some level of concern as to how they would regulate this type of stuff. And it may be useful to maybe outline some of those for people who are listening and watching just before we go into that. So there's talk then of a similarity between what's potentially in Scotland, what's happening in Scotland in regards to the colours that the bonds carry in terms of their flags, their colour parties and stuff. There's some stuff in it around the idea of uniforms and this idea of quasi-military marching, a suggested pace that bonds walk on, and also making it a bond captain's responsibility to sort out the gap between the lodge and a band, and then other things around using two bass drums, counter drumming, and all this kind of stuff. What are some of your thoughts on some of this here? Because I know for me, some of it flies, and some of it doesn't.
Again, I'm speaking in personal capacity here, and if I genuinely haven't read that aspect, I've heard aspects of the paper, haven't read, but again, that's a matter for discussion. My own feeling is, you don't fix them that's not broke. I think, by and large, there's good relationships. In fact, not by and large, there is good relationships between the vast majority of bands and lodges. You get the odd hiccup. You get the odd hiccup in anything. And I think there's already rules and regulations around a better word, they're not strong to deal with those things. Mm-hmm. Because if a band gets banned here, it's banned in Scotland and banned in England as well. So there's all those things. But a band would need to do some really difficult, there's some bad in many ways.
Yeah.
And there has been bands that have been barred and that has happened. So I don't know why we need to bring in another set of rules. When I was in the talks about improving the Parades Commissioner, replacing it with something that worked, we talked about, you know, it was actually the Lions put up a band register for the council. I said, are you going to license us like dogs?
Yeah.
I'm totally against the register, I have to say. I don't see the need for that whatsoever. But also then, if there is, and there is gaps in parades, but let's be honest about this, the lodges aren't as big as they were in some places.
Yeah, sure.
So a band can't, well, a big band with 60 men can't walk, and women can't walk with six men, then another band right behind it.
Yeah.
There is going to be gaps. But that should be worked out and managed with the bands. I don't think you bring legislation that makes somebody responsible. You talk to the bands, say how to improve. And their issues have arisen this year, and it's not even about flares.
Yeah.
Now, what do you call it, those flares? Call for myself, and, it caught you. So they're sitting, and you come and say, ban them. How can you ban them because of the public? I think we need to talk and say, look, there's people in ban, people watching the side of the road, old people, just it's catching them.
Yeah.
You know, so they're maybe not the best things. That's like, can we do something else? Something or else, another way of doing it? So I'm talking to people. And I think they need to talk to bands more if they perceive issues, and there's always issues.
Yeah.
And you decide and give clear outlines of what's expected of both.
Sure.
And so I think that's the way forward. If there is issue, but I wouldn't be in for bringing any more regulation against bands because I don't think we need it. Those issues, there are issues there, and they dealt with, but they're not massive and can't be overcome.
Yeah.
So I think more is talking to bands, and that's difficult. Bands are bands, and that bands don't, you know, they don't get into organisations oversee themselves that much because they're busy running their band. You're out so many nights a week practicing. You're out on Saturday at band parades all the time.
Yeah.
So the infrastructure is not there. So that we need to build that and get alongside the bands and talk to them more and deal with those specific issues if there are.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I know one of the things that there was some talk around the idea that because there's no official Belfast bands forum, that might have caused an issue. But I know there's the South and East forum that's been developed that recently. There's about five or six bands coming together to kind of talk about certain things, I suppose. I think there's an element where I know work that I've done, the bands are looking to do some stuff to regulate their own parades better.
Look, they've done that over the years. The bonds have improved massively over the years.
Yeah.
And through self-regulation.
And they've done that themselves. But I think there is an element where there is somewhere in the back of the minds of bonds is that they know that there's the potential of either legislation or council-driven approaches that are going to cause them some issues and concerns.
We would stand with the bonds resisting any approach by council to try and regulate. Now, that doesn't mean we say anybody can do anything. Same with the order, our own lodges.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's a certain decorum and all to meet. But I think 99.9%, that's met.
Yeah.
You don't need a hammer to crack a nut, shall we say. So I think we need to just be careful around what we do, because you get the usual thing, the bonds are walking around with the order, and that's a nonsense. We're all part of the one family.
Yeah.
Let's sort things out together.
And I have to say that whenever I hear about, you know, the council idea of regulating stuff, and I know that the council has responsibility certain things within there, but it's interesting that the idea of trying to regulate something that they don't really seem interested in.
No.
Outside of...
Well, that was political demands around that old parades issue, which is dead off. And there's no talk of council doing it now. It was a suggestion from one political party. I don't think a council would probably be keen on for obvious reasons. But it's just that idea of licensing the band. I don't buy into that.
Yeah.
A band's a band. And you're right, there is new groups emerging. But I say it's time I was involved in forming Cub, Professional Bands, because bands are all different things. Could you come in? And I went in, did a bit of work with them, getting them together and talk. But for the very reason I've outlined, people haven't time to commit an infrastructure to deal with things. So I think, and we can't force them into structures to do it, but it's good that there is forums and there's talk about, but the talk needs to be with each other as opposed to at each other.
Yeah, and I think that's probably something that, you know, whenever I got a hold of the document and read it, and I think, I hope somewhere along the line that they open up a form of dialogue with the bonds in order to talk this through, because let's face it, we're not just talking about Belfast bonds, we're talking about bonds that walk within the Belfast district.
Totally.
You know, and
23 Scots bonds alone.
You know, I mean, but even you look at it, I mean, there's bonds from Arch, from Bangor, and all over the place that come and walk in Belfast. But the idea is not just for the 12th, this is for this bonds register was for any bonds that are engaged by lodges within the county across the year.
Yeah, I can say certainly Grand Lodge aren't looking at anything like this. And again, Belfast put to their members, their membership might say they need it, but every part of the province is different. Some areas don't mind bonds dressing up on the way home. Other areas do. So you have to adapt to what particular area you're in.
Yeah.
So I don't think making regulation among counties is going to make a difference
elsewhere.
Because people know the difference in that county. And they can deal with bonds. There's a bond contract there and they can deal with bonds. Right? They don't. My opinion, as I say, if the county decided, that's up to them. But I personally just don't see additional regular. I think there's needs to be improvement on both sides. Sometimes the Orange is at fault in these things with caps and it's not all about bonds.
No, I think you're right.
It's
about
a better period for everybody.
One of the points that I had made when I was asked on to talk about this on the radio at one point, and one of the things that I had suggested was there was a mention in there around this idea of whenever you're passing another bond, not to be doing this counter drumming or not having a second. My first thing was, well, then have a better route.
Yeah.
You know, plan the route better so that you don't have bonds passing each other. Like
bonds will work that respect themselves. When I was in Bangor and it happened, it had to happen, just the nature of the route. And all the bonds on one side didn't play. So the bonds respect each other. You
don't you know. Well, there's an element of that sometimes. Now, the Easter Monday this year was a disaster for me anyway, because the bonds...
And
the
sports was a wonderful game.
Just get out of the way of that one. But no, for me, but it's not the first time that it's happened enough where the main part of the parade is you've got bonds coming this way, whether they're being passed or not, and it's just a blowout, the whole thing. And for me, that's just not an enjoyable experience, regardless, you know, and not just my bond's big enough.
Yes.
But even then, you know, you come up against a bond that's like 60, 70, 80 members and stuff like that. It's just not enjoyable. And even from probably a spectator's point of view, it's just a cacophony of noise, and you don't really get...
Bonds can work that out themselves. Hey, but I see these other bonds, and it happens all the time, clapping another bond going through. Out of respect.
I thought it broke up, but whatever their whatever they're they're past each other as part of their
plan. But if you get into regulations of that, then it's dot and A's and crossing T's and what do you call it? If somebody hits a drum once or twice, you know, is that the same? Or, and it's all sorts of. Although double drumming was always when they were never allowed to carry two bass drums after the same.
Well, I
know it's coming back this last year.
I'm not going to mention any bonds in particular, but I've seen one bond in particular with three. You know, so it's like.
That's a deal. There always was when I was growing up. There was always one bond. And again, there's this about throwing up the pole. I love to see that.
Yeah.
Drum major throwing up the pole and enjoying it.
I know. But it's part of it. It's a skill in terms of itself. You see some of those guys, what they do, you know.
Things develop. Look how many kids are in front of the bonds now.
And then those kids that are playing bass drums and stuff, and it's their first introduction.
Louis syndrome. I'm not a musician, so I don't know them.
You know, having the sort of the half drum or, you know, in terms of the
second. Bringing kids on.
Exactly. And I think you need to have that in terms of making sure that the tradition continues. Sure. And you've got some of those young people that are involved in bonds are seriously talented, you know, kids.
Absolutely.
And you don't wanna stifle that.
Not at all.
You know, in any shape or form. But it'll be interesting to see how that conversation develops, especially around this idea of walking at 110 beats per minute and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know how they regulate that in terms of someone walking around with a metronome for each bond to make sure you're walking at 110. If you don't, then what do you do? What are you saying? If you don't walk at 110, does that mean you're bond for next year?
And equally, a man like myself with a bad leg. If I can't keep up, I have to, you know, you get into silliness. But I think it's there. Whoever somebody's drawn up, the county will look at it and decide it's it's a matter for themselves. But personally, I just think there's issues creating another tier, shall we say, of regulation. And no need for it personally.
No, and I think, you know, as you say, the bonds have their own type of regulation in regards to what they expect when they operate. I think that could be a conversation. But I think that is a conversation that's hot between the private lodge and the thing that this, and, you know. But the other way to look at it is a lot of lodges have used the same bond for God knows how many years, you know what I mean? And you, there's an established relationship there. And actually what you found is a lot of bonds as a result of establishing that relationship with the lodge, that there's a cross-pollination that's taken place and that members of that bond are now members of that lodge, etc. And, you know, that's a good thing.
One example we'd hold up is Gertrude Starr and formed a lodge out of the bond. That's a way for the growing members of people feel no longer in the bond.
They've got an option there, and it's one of the biggest lodges in the county.
It is. So. It is, I have to say, it's one of the, along with Ballyselling Lodge. Yeah, Ballyselling Lodge is bigger, but they're all their big lodges. But I think we need to look at ways like that. And equally, people in the band, you know, showing they're in the order too.
Yeah,
I know some bands don't allow.
Yeah,
but I had great to see this the orange flash.
And yeah, the flash.
Sleeve stuff, one. Yeah, but that's a band's decision.
Yeah,
we could, you know, nobody should be kind. No, suggest anybody is saying it, but. But we like saying the bit of pessimism, like saying everybody in the band unit must wear orange on your shoulder or whatever. But bands, I know bands that don't wear anything.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. That's it.
So it's things find their own level. And if you begin to interfere too much, then it creates imbalance everywhere.
Yeah, well, as you say, there already is a contract between a lodge and a bond for engaging them that covers a lot of things. But for me personally, I think some of this stuff in this is just a step.
Yeah.
It's a step too far for me in terms of. I just think you'll have bonds that are already maybe apprehensive at times about maybe even. When there's a determination in a particular area about what it is that they're playing about, you know, worrying are you getting caught for something in the odd this end.
And I agree. That's always a decision for the band, because I'm not going to tell somebody it's going to get them a criminal offence. I want to get myself. That's my decision. I say my bonds. I don't think we should be telling that, and I don't think we do it. Maybe happened years ago. People are encouraged to do things, but I think if it's a decision for the band. I have no issue with a band. Decides not to break a determination, equally if a band decides to break a determination because of whatever reason, so I would still support that, because many of the determinations I think are horrendous, particularly anti-Protestant, anti-unionist in many ways. But that's down to the band, because if young lads not band, people in careers not band, nobody should be saying, oh, you break that, you have to. Even the crowd should at bands play something.
Exactly.
But it's your job, it's your livelihood, people have to look at that.
Well, this is it, you know, and I think when I said you'd mentioned about, you know, coming back down to Newton Arch Road and stuff, you know, being a really good, and I remember last year, I think there was a determination, as there always seems to be, as you're heading up towards where St. Matthews is. Isn't it St. Matthews on the North Road, isn't it? And I think we took more abuse from the people on the side of the road there who were out watching the parade because the band decided that they weren't going to play something and they just were on the top. Yeah. And it was, you thought that you had literally, you know, stole somebody's livelihood or something with the way the crowd was responding.
But that's the case of looking at both elements, because I said a band should play, and the band I walked behind this year in my own lodge, I walked up in my own lodge, played hymns all that night. Well, hymns that actually could sing orange tunes to as well, but they were hymns. But the crowd that lives there, and this is where the Parades Commission is at fault here, they're the indigenous population who live there. They're being denied their culture by the Parades Commission, so they get angry, but I don't think they should take it out in the bonds. But equally, so what we need to do is to work to get the Parades Commission changed, get the legislation changed, so it's more fair and equitable to our community.
Yeah, and I think that also comes down to the likes of the Parades Commission either, and I know some people won't go and speak to them, and I get that, but I think if we're looking to get some kind of change in regards to level and understanding, there needs to be some format for
it. Well, I think certainly some of it, and some lodges went and poured it down and went, the ultimate rule of the orange, only the Grand Master can authorise meeting, and I know people he's authorised to go in and see the Parades Commission, and they've said they've regretted asking, because it's their structures in many ways. Their legislation is flawed and biased against the parading tradition. So they're bound by that. So when you're going in, you get no change. Indeed, from MPs down, going in and said they've been treated like contempt. Now, the new commission telling you we're different, we're cutting off to us. But if you're dealing with flawed legislation, if you've shown no sign of any attempt, Portadown Downs a prime example. You know, they're telling people, oh, you have to talk all the time, you must talk. They're telling East Belfast you must talk. Mm-hmm. For their own reasons, East Belfast don't talk. But in Portadown, they're not telling the residents groups you have to talk. Yeah. Well, no, that's a settled matter. You know, there's been a protest continually for 25 years. So there's hypocrisy, no consistency about the Parades Commission. We live in a shared city. Let's accept your support of the orders on the 12th of July. You can't walk down Donegal Street. Mm-hmm. It's a sterile zone in many ways. Supporters, loyalists, unionists, brothers are banned from that area. Yet and all, there was an agreement with the priest at one time that the order was involved in. Yeah. And then somebody didn't like it. Immediately, then they withdrew from the agreement, shall we say. Of course, the priest might just step in, and that's it. Nobody's allowed down there. Yeah. Even though we showed willingness and it worked out an agreement, once one local resident decided to kick up, that was taken. So we're barred from the area. And there's been no redress, no return to that by the Parades Commission. So they need to show that they're willing to do something for the unions community, or not show the bias that they're intrinsically built into their system.
No, I think you're right. But I think there's definitely, there needs to be something that addresses their understanding of what, you know, going on. Even in regards to the likes of the music, the bands play and stuff like that. There, I think there needs to be some level of understanding with that, because a band may call a military march in terms of maybe walking past a particular area, and they can get pulled for that because it says sacred tunes only. You know, where for me, you can't get much more benign sometimes than the military march that say something that's called, whatever.
And even that case in Donegal Street, the priest, or say, even when the determination did come in, we said, not a single drum beat, because it sounds ominous coming down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, what did they say? No, a single drum beat, you know. We had offered hymns and all sorts of things, but you're not going to please them.
No, I think even you're right in that, the whole idea of that, you know, that.
Yeah.
You know,
I regard all tunes.
Bring out your dead type thing, isn't it?
I regard all tunes as sacred. So,
you know, well, it depends. I think it supports Glentoran, though. You know what I mean? So, you can do what you want with those. No, but I think there's room for some level of discussion. How that happens, as you say, there needs to be some change to the legislation, but I also think that they need to increase their understanding of whatever it is that they're making decisions about, because And that's where they don't understand maybe the sense of frustration and anger that sometimes comes from the as a result of what seems like almost idiotic at times.
And the other thing has to be said here, because of the legislation it is, the only reason we have peaceful trials is because the Republicans aren't kicking up.
Mm.
The legislation is such, if Republicans decide to make next 12th contentious, they would do it.
Mm.
And the legislation would allow them to do that and back that up.
Sure.
So in many ways, just it suits Republicans to turn the tab off at the minute because they want to be everybody's friend, want us to like in a place in New Ireland where every day will be the 12th of July. But if they realise that's not going to come about, and they decide, let's use parades again to raise the tensions.
Uh-huh.
The legislation's still there. The parades commission's current form. So they can turn it on and off as they like.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to get smarter, not reacting to things we were talking about earlier on. And hopefully it won't come back to that.
Yeah.
But sadly, if it does, the legislation's already skewed against
us. Yeah. But I think there's almost a sense that it's not that you're preparing for that, but you're wanting to make your process better.
Totally.
And that's more acceptable.
It's never been acceptable, the unions community. Never been acceptable. But it's all right. As long as Republicans are happy with it, then we'll keep it there.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. You know, and there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. Absolutely. And I think, but it's an ongoing thing, you know, and that's like life in any community. It's an ongoing process that we need to kind of be prepared for. But we need to have the mechanisms within the elements of culture within our communities to be able to respond appropriately. And I think that we're definitely starting to head in that direction.
Yes, yeah.
We bit maybe later than what we needed to be, but
we are where
the fact that it's definitely happening. So you mentioned earlier on there, you're definitely seeing a revival. What are your own thoughts in regards to, you know, the future of the institution? Where's it going, and how's the health of it in terms of how you see things?
As I said, I think we're in a good place. I think we need to give more responsibility to younger people coming through, and that's boys like me handing over responsibility and encouraging young people. You know, you like to hold on to things. You like that was always done this way. And it's like, so I'm maybe not susceptible to change times, but I'm susceptible to growth and encouragement. So it's encouraging young people. But equally, you have to understand, it's a different world we live in, society. You know, years ago when my father was in the order, my grandfather, you know, the order in the church, not take up all your social life and everything else. Now, since there's all sorts of things, you know, Sky TV, careful, whatever you want to call it, I've just changed Sunday, say, using the church example. So it's changed how people interact with the loyal orders. People don't have as much time to go to as many meetings. So we need to look at how we spend our time. Now, I wouldn't want the order to change from its core principles. And that is the promotion of Protestantism. And also the defence of the union. But there's the social side, the charity side. We see that. Like, one lodge alone raised $250,000 this year. From their charity. And we hear that all the time. Lodges come over, we have 5,000 for this. I think the 12th in Ballycastle raised 3,500 for their ambulance and stuff like that. So that charity. So I don't want to become a social organisation, just solely. But social is very much it. Charity is very much it. Faith is very much it at its very core. And the politics is there, but I don't want it to dominate it. I think we shouldn't get involved in local decisions, you know, as I said, our education. But when it comes to the union, I think we should be the unifying force where we can be. And encouraging others, like the new communities, to support the union as well. And play our part. I'm not saying we're the big player, the biggest player in there, but we are a major player and need to play our part. So it's getting more people involved and getting more people educated, because it sounds like people aren't educated. But for put an example, this year, we have a new exhibition in the Museum of Orange Heritage, and it's about the Glorious Revolution. It's called Liberty. And it's about the glory. That's what we prayed for in the 12th day. Let's get back to basics. I'm not saying everybody thinks, oh, we must know that why we prayed for the Glorious Revolution. That was all. Well, if people examine that, many of the freedoms and democracy, America's democracy flowed from the Glorious Revolution. The freedom of the press flowed from the Glorious Revolution. You can even say the Bank of England was formed in the Glorious Revolution, but that's a different argument. But if you go and look at that exhibition, people think it'll be this and it'll be all that. You have Martin Luther King Jr. You have Rosa Parks, she actually has an Ulster Scots background and her ancestry. Those are the things we were supporting. That's what the Glorious Revolution is. That type of freedom, we have allowed Republicans in particular to steal those clothes. Because it was William brought civil and religious liberty for all.
For everybody,
Not just Protestants. Sometimes that's been abused in the past. It's been abused by the South and the way you had a Catholic state down there and a Catholic government just serving the purposes of the church. We've seen the repercussions of that. But we're getting back to this basic civil and religious liberty for all. And that means not just for me. It means for everybody.
For everybody,
from all creeds and none. So I think we begin to discover that, discover our own history again and what it truly means and begin to live that out. Along with our neighbours, not separately. I want to get on with the Republic of Ireland as a neighbouring government. I want to get on with neighbours as best I can in communities. But that needs both sides to be prepared to do that and work at it. And that includes us as
well. I think you're right in terms of your stuff when you talk about that historical aspect of the Glorious Revolution. A pivotal point in European history. And a lot of its terms of the things that brought some level of finality to that actually happened on these shores. And I think that gets lost in the whole them and us scenario. And it's not really a them and us. It was something weighter than that. And that this event and events that we celebrate as part of our thing all contributed to that having major change, not just in terms of the constitution, but in terms of public and civic life.
Absolutely. We have a constitutional monarchy today because of the Glorious Revolution. We had a coronation recently and we have an election department next year because of the Glorious Revolution.
So, and again, but that then comes back down to this idea of knowing your knowing where you've come
from. And we don't want everybody to be a nerd about it. We want an understanding
about it. But it's about being able to put it in context. To say, well, listen, this is actually, you know, the wider picture here is this. It's not just this one wheel.
We were part of that wider picture.
Exactly.
We're not some sort of sub-tribe that sits in the corner and we really just to be abused at times. We were part of that. And we've lost that. And in many ways, we need to rediscover that and say we were in the centre of all this.
So then whenever you get that out, it was a 20-minute skirmish over a river that's not that wide.
That's right. There wasn't many people killed in it. Wasn't many. It was a smallies battle. But it was an important battle.
But an important part of a wider a wider context in terms of what was not just happening on the British Isles, but that was happening across Europe as a whole. Because I think whenever you talk about even the makeup of William's army and stuff, the range Dutch, of nationalities that were there,
Germans,
but this wasn't an experience that was isolated to the British Isles. This went way beyond. This was, you were talking about France, you were talking about Germany, you were talking.
So Son Kane, there was the Pope, there was the politics of Europe.
Exactly. There was a massive, massive thing, and I think that is something that is missed in the midst of people talking about this, which is dead on. So, healthy organisation, healthy looking outlook for the future, and hopefully a couple of decisions in regards to something.
That's a matter for that's a matter in the Belfast County to come to terms with.
But hopefully, if they open up the lanes of communication, which they will have to do in regards to the private lodges, in regards to that, you know,
it's building that.
I think that there's definitely the idea of there being change or potentially have adopting things in order to make it better is definitely a positive thing. Because that's the other thing, is just sometimes it's been leveled, oh, you just want to keep your tradition, you just want to change anything. And then when there is a change, Brian's like, what the hell do you think you're doing? And it's that tightrope that you've walked quite, you know, it's a confining kind of space to defend yourself within and stuff. But I really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to me about that stuff, and maybe we'll get a chance to do more of this type of stuff. I'd love to have, you know, another more conversations about some of that, maybe that historic stuff, you know, and start putting some stuff together that educates as well, you know. So, but I really appreciate you
coming
in and talking
to me.
Alrighty, brilliant.
All the best, bro.
Great. Folks, thanks very much for joining in and watching us. And again, thanks to Demurban for coming on to the podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. This is taking place in a very makeshift studio in my offices at work. And it's been hastily put together. But it's been great. The background looks all right here. And we'll get the green screen up at some point and we'll change all that stuff. But folks, this has been a Made to Parade podcast with Mervyn Gibson from the Orange Order, and I hope you enjoyed it, and join us on the next one whenever that happens. Thank you.